Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 303 for February 13th, 2011. I'm on location this week in Edinburgh. And before every listener in Scotland sends me emails to correct that pronunciation, it's not that Edinburgh. I'm in Edinburgh, Indiana. My parents live nearby and I'm visiting on family business for a few days. But Whiskey Cask goes on.
We presented them with a selection of casks, and I can't remember how many folk were there, Ryan. It must have been about 15 folk, so there was a lot of samples up in.
Yeah, I think we had 12 or 13 of us, I think, there joining you in Scotland, which was great.
That's Alistair Longwell of Ardmore and Ryan Maloney of Julio's Liquors in Westboro, Massachusetts, which is about to get the first single cask bottling of Ardmore straight from the distillery. More on that later on, along with the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First, though, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Diageo, the world's largest whiskey and spirits company, reported a 17% increase in net profits for the first half of the fiscal year this week, as strong sales in Asia, Africa, and the U.S. buffered the impact of declining sales and profits in Europe. And Diageo may be looking to get even bigger. CEO Paul Walsh told reporters the company will keep an eye on Beam Global Spirits and Wine if it becomes an acquisition target. As I've reported before, Beam Global parent Fortune Brands plans to turn Beam into a standalone business after it splits off its home and golf units later this year. Analysts expect some of the brands in the Beam portfolio to be available at that point. However, antitrust regulators would likely block Diageo from swallowing up the entire company. While Walsh said Diageo would look at opportunities to acquire new brands, he plans to focus on organic growth. Meanwhile, Beam is moving ahead with plans for its own organic growth, and one could call those plans a bold choice. In fact, that's the theme of a new ad campaign for Beam's flagship Jim Beam bourbon. The campaign includes an ad featuring Jim Beam master distiller Fred Noe in his TV debut, along with the first ad for Beam's Red Stag, and a Jim Beam ad featuring actor Willem Dafoe. The campaign also includes the naming of the boldest towns in America. Spokane, Washington came in first, while Philadelphia came in dead last at 100th. And since I live in the Philly area, I'd take issue with that, but Spokane's not a bad place. On another bourbon note, the Pogue family's old Pogue bourbons have been distilled in Bardstown since the 1950s, but the Pogue's roots are in Maysville, Kentucky, and the family wants to start making its bourbon in Maysville once again. The Pogues have started the local permitting process to set up a distillery at the Ryan Pogue House in Maysville. It's right across the road from the family's original distillery in what used to be called Limestone Station, Kentucky, which also used to be part of Bourbon County, as opposed to Bourbon Country. The plans still need state and federal approval. It could be up to a year before the family gets final approval. We're still a ways away from Kentucky Derby weekend, but the unveiling of special Derby commemorative bottles is a sure sign that spring isn't far off. Brown-Forman's Early Times has selected a winner in the competition to design the artwork for its Derby Mint Julep bottle this year. The judges picked a painting by Oklahoma artist Marita Walliter for this year's bottle. She's a Louisville native and wins $5,000 and a trip home for this year's Derby. The Mint Julep bottling will be available starting in April. One final note from Kentucky. For the first time, the Kentucky Distillers Association is allowing small craft distillers to join, and Dr. Pierce Lyons of Alltech and the Kentucky Brewing Company became the first one to sign up. You may recall my interview with Dr. Lyons last August in episode 274. He set up a small distillery at his brewery in Lexington several years ago and released his Pierce Lyons Reserve single malt whiskey last fall. Now, Dr. Lyons has his roots in Ireland and Irish whiskey distilling, and there's another new Irish whiskey from Napog Castle to mention. Napog Castle Twinwood is a 16-year-old whiskey that spent just over 15 years in bourbon casks before being transferred to sherry casks for final maturation. It's the first time Napog Castle has released a finished whiskey, and it marks the 60th anniversary of Napog Castle's legendary 1951 whiskey distilled at the long-gone B. Daly Distillery. Just 1,900 bottles of Twinwood will be available at a suggested price of $100 a bottle. Jim McEwen doesn't just make whiskeys for Brooklady and pick casks for the Murray McDavid range. Every so often, Jim releases specially selected casks under the Celtic Heartlands label, and the sixth set of Celtic Heartlands bottlings is now available. The series includes two Boonehavens from 1968 and 1976, a Kalila from 1980, and a Glenlivet from 1977. Finally, we heard from Glenn Glassock's Stuart Nickerson about the Manager's Legacy series of single cask releases last fall. The third release in that series is now available. This one honors Bert Forsyth, who managed the distillery between 1964 and 1968. It's from a refill sherry butt filled in December of 1968, and just 300 bottles are available. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Let's check the emails of the week now, brought to you this time around by Highland Park. Heard from Robert Mundy this week. Here's what he had to say. Hi, Mark. I'm a big fan of Whiskey Cast. I am new to the world of whiskey, especially Scotch. I love your website and podcast. I have learned a lot about whiskey from you. Because of you, I know why I like a certain whiskey, not just that it is good or bad. You have helped educate me about the world of whiskey. I still have a lot to learn, and I thank you very much for your great work and passion. I have listened to all of your episodes about three times in the last year. I do have one question. Could you tell me the episode number when you had a tasting talk on the differences between adding water to whiskey and adding whiskey to water? Keep up the good work. You're a blessing to the world of whiskey. Thank you, Robert. I do appreciate the kind words. You're thinking of episode 265 from June of last year, when Morrison Bowmore master blender Ian McCallum suggested tasting whiskey both ways. Also, I heard from Bob Townsend of the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming, after the last episode, when I mentioned his second Saturday's single malt tasting in the calendar of events section. Here's what he had to say. Morning, Mark. Thanks for the plug on today's show. Quite an honor. Enjoyed your discussion with Jim Murray. Him forgetting the name of a memorable whiskey made him seem a little more human than he's often portrayed. Thank you, Bob. And if you have a question or a suggestion, my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and you can use the Whiskey Cast Facebook page, too. The emails of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park. And I'd like to thank the folks at Highland Park. They've decided to renew their sponsorship of the Emails of the Week segment for another year, and I do appreciate their support. Let's check the calendar of events now. Brought to you for the fourth consecutive year by Laphroaig. Woodford Reserve's first Bourbon Academy of the Year is this coming Saturday at the distillery in Versailles, Kentucky. Whiskey Live Tokyo is this coming weekend as well. The Brandy Library in New York City has several spirit school classes coming up over the next couple of weeks. Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville will host a Maker's Mark Distillers dinner on the 28th. Whiskey Live London is March 3rd and 4th, and that same weekend is Whiskey Weekend in Bremen, Germany. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. Now, Ardmore is Laphroaig's sister distillery. It's up near Aberdeen and has been operating for more than 100 years. But almost all of its output went for blending until recently, except for the occasional cask that made it to an independent bottler or two. But several years ago, Beam Global, which owns Ardmore, decided to release two official distillery bottlings, the Ardmore Traditional, which carries no age statement, and a 30-year-old expression. Now there's a third official bottling, a single cask Ardmore, that will debut later this month at Julio's Liquors in Westboro, Massachusetts. Earlier this week, the owner of Julio's, Ryan Maloney, and Ardmore Distillery Manager Alistair Longwell joined me via Skype.
Whose idea was this to do the single cask Ardmore for Julio's? Ryan, was this your idea? Alistair, was this your idea? Who came up with this?
I think this one was Ryan's to begin with, so I'll pass this one to Ryan.
I think what it basically was is it was sort of a mutual idea, and I'll tell you why. We were talking about how last time Alistair was here is, you know, they make such a good brand. We were trying to figure out, you know, how to get the American market thought of going on it. And so we started talking. So, you know, we should do something like a little different, a little special, just to bring spotlight on the brand. And then that's what we decided to do, something like this. No, so it was really just us, you know, getting together and just sort of like free-flowing ideas of what we could do. And then we had to get everybody else involved, and you know how that is. That's bad.
I assume this had to go through various levels of approval within Beam Global, Alistair?
Well, yes. I mean, this is something, this is unique for us. This is the very first time we've done a private bottling for a client or, you know, or in this case, a friend of the distillery. So it was something like stepping into the unknown for us. We didn't have a process in place, you know. Beam are quite a large organization. We're kind of used to dealing with kind of larger kind of contracts. So dealing with just a single cask actually proved a wee bit problematic, but we were very keen to do it because I was very fortunate a couple of years ago to be over there at Julio's and met the guys from the Lock and Key Society. Myself and Simon were there doing a tasting, and then when the guys came over here to Scotland, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity for them to come in and choose their own cask. And it's the first time for us, but it's obviously not the first time for Ryan and the guys at the Lock and Key, because they've been very successful in extracting casks from some other very famous distillers. So we're very pleased to join quite elevated company in that regard.
I'm just going to let you know a little on something. The last time Alistair was here, the guys were so impressed. You know, the girls and guys that are part of the Lock and Key Society were so impressed with Alistair, is before this even came about, they had already basically, he was chosen to be the key holder, win the key holder award. So they all felt great about him and what he was doing for his passion and about whiskey. And at the same time, him and I were already talking about doing this this side project.
Let's go through the mechanics here. How did you decide, first of all, which casks they were going to get a chance to nose, Alistair?
Well, you know, we've talked before briefly, Mark. The thing about Ardmore is we were pretty much putting most of our single malt going into Teachers and then going into to get the other constituent part from Teachers. So we don't have a massive inventory, but we do have some pretty good casks of a mid-age. So myself and George Forsyth, who's the assistant manager here, we had a little bit of a scouting expedition, and we had a look at what was in the stocks, and we obviously did a little bit of quality control and opened a few casks, and we pulled together a selection. We pulled together a selection of mid-age bourbons and also some quarter casks. But the actual selection of the final cask was really down to Ryan and the rest of the guys there. They came along. We presented them with a selection of casks, and I can't remember how many folk were there, Ryan. It must have been about 15 folks, so there was a lot of samples up in.
Yeah, I think we had 12 or 13 of us, I think, there joining you in Scotland, which was great.
And then I imagine it took a lot of dips of the whiskey thief to get all those samples out of each cask
for
you guys, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You can't rush these things.
So that was basically, we had a look and we thought, trying to find some good quality spirit that would work well, and we thought would be representative and reflective of this first ever customer bottling. And then the final choice was down to Ryan and the guys. And I have to say, there's some excellent noses in that group. They've got a couple of masters of whiskey and a few guys who kind of work in the industry. So they know what they're talking about, and they've put their nose into plenty of whiskey samples, so they're not daft.
Now, when Ryan told me about this cask, Alistair, he described it as about as close to 13 years old as you could get without still making it 12 years old. Give me the specifics on this cask, guys.
It was a cask from the very first bottling. The very first cask filling of 1998. So it was right off the very fresh production runs of that year. I personally feel that one of my favorite Ardmores is the Centenary bottling.
Oh yeah,
the distillery did in 1999. You'll be familiar with it, Mark. Wonderful, wonderful whiskey, and that was again also a 12-year-old, and that's a pretty good age for Ardmore. The peat smoke's still in there, but it's kind of rougher edges are at that point balanced off a bit, and you get a lot more sweet notes. You get some citrus notes starting to come through. So I think that's just about the perfect age for an Ardmore that's been in a first fill bourbon. So that's kind of where we went from when we selected that cask. But of course, it's not just been in that cask, because after Ryan selected that particular cask that he did, we then decanted it and we gave it a little polish in one of our bespoke quarter casks here at the distillery. So it's had a wee second maturation, a little polish in a quarter cask as well.
Which is very similar to what you do with the Ardmore Traditional, right?
Absolutely. But the exception with the Ardmore Traditional, we're marrying a range of ages, so we're not doing single casks per se. We're marrying a range of ages of ex-bourbon spirit and then finishing off in the quarter casks. So this one should be pretty much different from the standard Ardmore Traditional bottling.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, too, is that the people are really going to, with this production that I'm going to come out with, you know, it's called the Ardmore Project, that we're going to come out with and people are going to get to try. They're actually going to get to really get the essence of what Ardmore is really all about, you know, rather than just the standard bottling. It is something setting itself apart, which is the cool thing about it. And, you know, when you enjoy this, too, and what's great is you're going to get really, now you still have the regular Ardmore expression. So you have, like, these two different expressions that we're hoping will lead people to just explore Ardmore even more. And hopefully Alistair, after this, gives him maybe some of the freedom to do some of these other types of things with the product itself, too.
Tell me, Ryan, about the tasting notes for this one compared to the Ardmore Traditional. What made this cask stand out for you guys?
Well, I think, as Alistair was saying, you get some of that citrus notes, you get some of the, definitely still have some of the vanillins, and it's a really good offset to that really light smoke that you get with even the regular Ardmore line. But the bourbon sort of aspect of it really comes through. Not so much that you're tasting bourbon, but those vanilla notes really shine, and they're offset with the smokiness. It's just a really nice balance. And I just, you know, fortunately, I smuggled a little bit of it back, and I've just been blind tasting people with it. And the really funny part is no one can sort of peg it exactly what it is. But all they know is, wow, that's really great. I really love that. So we're excited because I think a wide group of people, I think, are really going to be drawn to this particular expression.
Yeah. I mean, the sweet flavors that come through, Ardmore is a Highland malt, and we do have some very rich, malty, sweet flavors in the spirit, and they can be a little bit dominated by the smoke at an early age, but by the time we get through to the age we're talking about, 12, 13 years of age, some of the rougher edges of the smoke have been knocked off. So it's not just the vanillins and the caramel notes we're getting in from the cask, but we're also starting to see some of the distillation sweet notes getting revealed again. So it's really quite a nice, well-complemented palate and body.
It's well-balanced overall.
And what really sets Ardmore apart from other Highland malts is the smoky factor. It's almost more like the traditional Highland malts of old when they used to use more peat and more smoke in making Highland malts, right, Alistair?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's what takes people by surprise because, first of all, they're not expecting to have any smoke or smoke of that level in a Highland. And then when you talk to people about a peated whiskey or a smoky whiskey, they're instantly assuming they're going to get a West Coast flavor, you know, the maritime peat, like from our sister distillery, Lathroic. And you don't get that because it's Aberdeenshire peat. It's from the Highlands. It's an upland peat. So it's quite a unique little flavor package you get.
Now, Ryan, you're going to debut this in a couple of weeks at your Whiskey A Go-Go Festival, right?
Yes, if everything goes according to plan, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men.
This is on a truck somewhere in Kentucky. You're on a pallet somewhere in Kentucky to be shipped to Massachusetts, right?
Absolutely. That's what we're both crossing our fingers on. But it is gonna debut here during our Whiskey Festival, which is the Whiskey A Go-Go on February 27th. We'll have it there. And actually, Simon, who's the third member of this group that really isn't here today, Simon Brookings, he helped us a lot. Alistair and I get a lot of this stuff done, which was great. He's going to be here too. And what we're looking at doing is actually having Alistair Skype in, so he'll be the talking head in the box that people will be able to ask him questions about, the whole distillation process and really what Ardmore is doing. And the best part about when we were picking this project to do, is the part I liked is that, you know, with the everybody looking at these new smoky whiskeys, you know, from Islay and, you know, that being predominant, and everybody's, what I loved is that Ardmore has always been smoke, like that smoky quality to it. It's always been a smoked malt. So it wasn't really, it was cool because it had always been that way, so you're getting that traditional, and we're also getting some of the stuff that's sort of like in vogue right now, too.
Alistair, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say we shouldn't underestimate the influence that Simon's had in this. Simon's been the kind of oil that's got a lot of the cogs and been moving on this one, so he's been a major driver in getting this thing moving from Ryan's end through to my end.
Yeah, he got to be the go-to guy, and really, you know, Alistair and I could only do so much, and you know, a lot of the credit goes to him. We really couldn't have gotten this done without him.
Now, Alistair, while I've got you on the phone, the last time we were talking, you had just gotten the folks at Beam to let you do some work on the Visitor's Center. What's going on there?
Well, actually, we've got a meeting about that tomorrow with the architect, and we're just finalizing putting in proposals for some CapEx to get some money. The Visitor Center won't be, you know, a visitor center in the kind of traditional form, you know, bringing in big bus tours, etc. It's really bringing in a couple of brand rooms, one for teachers, one for Ardmore, where we can bring people in into a nice environment and give them some of the history and some of the brand heritage. So all being well, we would hope to get that formalized in the next few weeks, and we could be talking about moving in there end of the year, early next year, if all goes well.
And that's something you've really been wanting to do, because with the distillery as close as it is to Aberdeen, you're able to bring in some people if they wanted to come visit the distillery. You're able to attract them, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, we're really looking to get everything from groups. You know, this is Ryan was saying, 13 people over from Julio's, but we could also like to have small groups. But it's really whiskey aficionados we're looking to bring them. But we would like to have facilities here to allow us to do that. We can do it at the moment, but it's quite hard work for us, you know.
Anything else going on your front, Alistair, that we should know about with Ardmore?
Yeah, we're spending a lot of money here again at the distillery. Beam's been very good with investment. We recently started reusing our old traditional dunnage warehouses. That's where we were with Ryan and his group by the tail end of last year, and we're just about £1 million re-roofing all them. So a fair bit of investment going on here at the distillery.
You didn't lose any warehouse roofs in the snow this winter, did you?
No, we were quite fortunate. Lost a bit of time, and we got a few knocks and bumps from slipping and sliding, but no, the warehouse has held up okay.
And Ryan, tell us, for anybody who's interested, where they can find out more about the Whiskey A Go-Go.
Yes, anybody's free to join. We have members from all over the world. It's our Lock and Key Society, so it's www.lochandkey.com, which is our Whiskey Society, and they can go there and they'll see who's coming to Whiskey A Go-Go. We actually have a seminar that's filling up very fast the day before on the 26th of February, and the Whiskey A Go-Go is the 27th. And we're also having a meet and greet on the 26th also. So hopefully next year it's going to change to a whole whiskey weekend. So we're actually building on already what we have.
So the key question I've got to ask here, guys, is how many bottles of this are going to be available? How much will it sell for? And where can you ship it to?
Okay, well, I'll let Alistair tell you. How many bottles did it produce, Alistair?
Oh, it was about 220 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I know we haven't gotten the, of course, you know, they're very secretive about what they're actually going to charge us, but it should be between $50 and $60 retail, and it will look like the regular bottling. This is one of the ways we sort of did it. It will have a lock and key sticker on it that says the Ardmore Project 1998 on the bottling to differentiate itself from the regular Ardmore product that's out there now. And it'll be offered on our website at Julio's Liquors and Lock and Key when it becomes available. And just
just order it, and somebody from our shipping department will get a hold of you if we can or cannot ship to your state. And become a member, and guys ship to each other all the time, privately. So.
And that would include shipping internationally, too, right?
Yeah, we have guys that ship in between each other. So a member of the society is always glad to help out, if you know what I mean.
Okay, we don't want to be too obvious about that. Alistair, I assume you're going to keep at least a case of this for yourself?
Do you know, I've only got a couple of bottles. I'll be speaking to Ryan after this conversation to make sure I get a case sent back to me.
Was this fun?
He has to come here and pick it up because we want to see him again.
Of course. Was this a fun project to work on?
Absolutely. Oh, yes.
Definitely. Definitely. It's far and few between. You get the chance to actually, work with somebody of Alistair's credentials and character to do something that's just a little bit outside the box, especially in, a lot of the corporate settings that we're now in the whiskey industry. To allow that to happen, it's amazing.
Alistair, can you see doing this again in the future?
I would like to think we could do it. I wouldn't like to do it too often. I think it's been quite special. It's been very special to get the key to the Lock and Key Society, so I don't want to be diluting all this. But yeah, I would like to try and do some more of this in the future. It's a good way of getting Ardmore out into a new audience, and it's also a good way of just finding out the best ways to present our wonderful single malt here.
Any final thoughts, guys?
I'm looking forward to the tasting. I'm looking forward to next Sunday and hook our 2 weeks time and hooking up with the guys. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, we're just happy. We're waiting anxiously, like kids before on Christmas Eve, waiting for our whiskey to arrive. Well, I guess not kids, but like you know what I mean. Waiting patiently for our whiskey to arrive.
You'll find my tasting notes for the other Ardmore Distillery bottlings on the WhiskeyCast website and in the WhiskeyCast smartphone apps. In the meantime, let's look at a couple of 17-year-olds in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First off, the Glenfarclas 17-year-old is bottled at 43% ABV. The nose is fragrant with notes of candied orange peel, brandy, nutmeg, banana, and hints of coconut and dark chocolate. The taste is creamy and rich with cinnamon, molasses, banana, red apples, and hints of orange peel and brandy. The finish is spicy and slightly tart with a citrus hint of orange peel. Overall, very smooth. I'm giving the Glenfarclas 17-year-old a 92. The Old Pulteney 17-year-old, meanwhile, is bottled at 46% ABV. The nose has a smoky touch with oak sawdust, graham crackers, peanut butter fudge, and just a touch of salt. The taste is spicy with a note of frying bacon, smoked coconut, touches of cilantro and hazelnut, and a hint of lemon-like tartness that lasts through the finish. It's a complex and well-balanced whiskey. I'm giving the Old Pulteney 17-year-old a 91. You'll find all of my tasting notes in the WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, as well as the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find the calendar of events, links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and this time around comes to you from Edinburgh, Indiana, where the G is hard and so is the whiskey. Unfortunately, they don't sell it on Sundays here. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.